With the death of O.J. Simpson, a new light has been shown on the deaths of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. Was O.J. Simpson the only one there that day? Was he there at all? Did he have an accomplice? Well, our next guest may upend the entire narrative around these murders. My next guest is an investigator and author, Chris Todd, who has been shining a light on the perhaps real story of what actually happened that night. And Chris joins us now to really dive deep into this. Chris, great to see you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Clayton. I'm honored to be here. Love the show.
Well, it's a real pleasure. And I have to admit, I think, you know, we've all been told a certain story about what happened that night. And when I first learned of your investigations on this, I was blown away by it. I mean, nationally, consciously, we've had a certain story that's been shoved into our brains for so many years. O.J. Simpson dies. And now maybe it's the best time to really look at what really happened there. So can you just first, before we get into your research and your investigation of what really happened, can you paint a picture for what we've all been told? Like what is sort of the national narrative around this story we all are sort of walking around believing about this O.J. Simpson story?
Yeah, I mean, I live the story. A lot of people my age, I'm 50 years old, so we call it the Gen X, and obviously the baby boomers are ahead of us, and they lived it too. So there were really two main generations that lived the O.J. Simpson story, even going back to him as a football player, his iconic status before 1994, the Hertz commercials, Naked Gun, he carried the torch for the Olympics in L.A., He was almost like the Michael Jordan of football at one time. There were other great running backs, of course. I'm not saying he's the greatest of all time. He holds some records today that have never been broken. He was a pioneer in the sport. He was one of the first black spokespeople for a major company in America. Okay, he was in an interracial marriage after Marguerite with Nicole, and they were one of the first mainstream interracial couples. So he really was more than just football. Okay, and he had the looks and he was charismatic and he was a bright guy. He lived an amazing life and he flushed it all down the toilet, basically. So I thought OJ was guilty when I first ever heard anything about it. The blood evidence, the glove, the hat, just blood in the Bronco, blood at the crime scene at Bundy. You know, DNA was kind of new at the time. Yeah.
Domestic violence history.
Right. I mean, they leaked part of that tape that actually got David Kahn removed from the case. He was the first DA before Marsha Clark. People don't know that. It wasn't supposed to be Marsha Clark. It was David Kahn. And because he leaked they needed a fall guy which was dumb of them to leak the domestic violence call of Nicole before we even hit the ground, like already painting OJ as a guilty man, which probably violated his rights immediately by releasing it might be public, I guess, a 911 call, but in this case, that should have been withdrawn. That should not have been played right away. So it's a fascinating story. I've been on this for 7 years. I got to know these people. I know these producers. I know Charlie, and it's been up and down, and there's a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, I've been censored by the media for over 3 years, and people like you that are courageous, I feel you guys are real journalists. The mainstream media, what they've done to me is deplorable and is pathetic. And I've called out any reporters that ever want to talk to me or meet me or reveal that OJ had a murder accomplice. This guy still walks the streets today and he already confessed on tape. So yes. So for the media to do this, I wish I could have got, OJ knew who I was. I have some texts from OJ. OJ knew that what I was doing. Okay. Unfortunately, we were not able to reveal this while OJ was alive. And maybe that God is in control of that. He's gone now. I hope the truth comes out. And I thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Well, I want to get into all this. This is a major twist in this story that probably everyone watching right now has no idea about. So the story I think everyone believes and you know understands is that OJ was the sole person there that night, and that's who killed Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, and he was acquitted, right? The glove doesn't fit. You must acquit. We know that. Then of course he was of course convicted on the civil side. and walked around the rest of his life sort of head in shame. And I think most people believe that he was responsible for it and directly involved in it. But to learn that there was someone else there helping him is a story I'd never heard before. How did you first learn that he wasn't the only one there that night?
I 7 years ago, I met a producer through a friend of mine that worked for studios. I worked in Hollywood for 20 years. So I knew these studio executives, I knew these producers. They wanted me to meet this guy. They said, hey, this guy would love to talk to you, because he knew I did Natalie Wood, Aaron Hernandez, some other famous like murder cases I was working on, writing books, doing smaller stuff. And I got to meet them. I did a meeting and they said, hey, we have this O.J. Simpson project coming down the pike. This guy's going to come forward. And I didn't want it. I wanted nothing to do with it. I was like, we're going to show a movie about Nicole and Ron getting murdered? I'm like, nobody wants to see that. Like, you say OJ's name, it's like your stomach churns. So anyway, right. As time went by, a few months, almost a year, it kind of dawned on me, there's someone else there. Like, I figured it out. Like, this is the only thing it can be. So I called the guy late at night one night, and I tell this story, and I said, okay, I'm interested. I want to do it. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? Why are you calling me at 1 a.m? I'm like, I want to do it right now. I'm ready to go. He's like, you don't even know what it is. I go, I do know what it is. And when I went in that Monday morning, I read a screenplay that he wrote with this producer talking about being with O.J. Simpson at Bundy on June 12th, 1994.
So the guy that comes forward, his name is Charlie. Mm-hmm. He came forward to these producers to tell them that he was there that day?
To make a movie and to do a book about his life in the mafia, his life of crime, how he met O.J. Simpson, and why the murders happened.
Why would he do that? Why would he want to come forward to clear his conscience? Or did he have some sort of a immunity protection? Money. Just money.
Well, why?
But if you come forward and confess to being an accomplice in murder, I mean, you're going to prison for the rest of your life. No?
Well, that's the beauty and the complexity of this story. It's a cerebral story. This guy's a 5-time convicted felon. He's a mafioso. They're born into the mob. Their life is a lie. So if he comes forward and he's told us this too, which is fascinating, and you say, yeah, I was with OJ. OJ did it. I didn't do it. OJ did it. That's what he tries to say. He doesn't tell you he's stabbing Ron Goldman. He doesn't say that on a tape. Okay. He's saying OJ did it. I was there. I'm sorry. I read the evidence, the knives, plural, the shoes and the clothes. So they never found it. And I parked the Bronco at Rockingham, not OJ. And when you look at the testimony, you'll see it. The Bronco was never there. When Alan Park, the limo driver, came, he never saw it before, during, or after. So you start to put the pieces together. There's 10.5 size bloody shoe prints at the crime scene. They're not OJ's. Whose are they? There's a hat left in the Bronco. Whose hat is that? Why aren't these things used as evidence? Some of it was, but my answer to you is this. There's a double jeopardy on OJ. You can't reopen it. So even if he goes, yeah, I was with OJ. Then you bang on his door, LAPD. Oh, I made it all up. He's got all the, he's got it all. It's the mafia is genius with this. You don't know if they're coming or going. You don't know if he's telling you the truth or he's lying. OJ wrote a book called If I Did It in chapter 6. He said there was a guy named Charlie with him. Who's Charlie? He did a Judith Regan interview on Fox that was shelved for 12 years by Rupert Murdoch. He said Charlie brought the knife and Charlie followed this guy in. Who's Charlie? OJ already told us. That's what's fascinating. He told us he had an accomplice named Charlie.
You're blowing my mind. And that's not easy to do with the stuff that I hear on a regular basis. It's remarkable. So he comes forward to these producers to let them know. And so he's aware legally that he was basically protected.
OJ his protection is OJ Simpson. So while he's alive, you can't use OJ as an interrogator. You cannot use him in the trial. You cannot even question him. He has double jeopardy, his immunity. He's done. So who's your witness? And that's why Charlie says, they ain't going to do nothing. That's how he says it. Like, they're not going to do anything. You think, I know
so
what
Charlie. So Charlie's still alive.
Oh yeah. He lives in Miami.
How old is he?
70.
So
from the other
just
day,
so we under-
I called him up the other day because he did an interview on CNN with Caitlin Williams and talked about OJ Simpson, and CNN called the police on me when I tried to report to them who Charlie was. Are you guys real journalists at CNN or are you tabloid? What are you? You called the cops on me.
They called the cops on you because you notified CNN of who this guy is.
I called CNN twice in Atlanta. I called the LA office like two or three times over years. Kept telling them. CNN repeatedly blocked me. Repeatedly. And then they interview Charlie and ask him how he knew OJ's kids, Nicole's children. And he goes, yeah, I spent Christmas with, you know, Justin and Sydney. This is sick. You're sick, dude. You helped OJ murder their mother. Yes.
So, man, I have so many questions about this. DNA evidence. Was there DNA evidence in the Bronco associated with this guy, Charlie?
There is blood evidence on the steering wheel in the Bronco that does not match OJ, Ron, or Nicole. There is blood at Bundy that does not match OJ, Ron, or Nicole. What's up? When Barry Scheck did his closing argument, he said under Nicole's nails are a type B blood. OJ's not a B, Ron or Nicole. Whose blood is it? There's two root hairs in the hat, in the Bronco. Whose are they? If they were OJ's, they would have used it. They're not OJ's. Why are there 10 fingerprints at the crime scene that don't match OJ, Ron, or Nicole? These things are going to, yes, I know. And I'm going to do it slowly with you. I understand. You live this too. It's going to be right. Shocking and it's going to be disturbing. Okay. But the truth will set you free. And this is a fascinating true crime story. This is the granddaddy of them all.
So really the gestational process here is that these producers come to you and say, this guy, Charlie, is ready to come forward and tell his story. Do you want to be involved in this project on an investigation side and be involved in it? And you said, no, I'm not going to be involved in it. And then
I wasn't
sort of the lightning bolt moment.
I wasn't the investigator. I was the shopper. I was a producer. I was a Hollywood okay. guy. They came to me because I was about to make the Natalie Wood murder movie. I had financiers, I had agents, I had managers. That's why they knew I was doing that. And they were like, we knew we had a mutual friend. So they're like, wow, this guy's ambitious. He's aggressive. They used to call me like a pit bull. And they'd be like, this is the guy. We need a guy like you to go out there. And I did. And I brought them Sony Pictures at 20 million. I brought them deals. I brought major players. And they kept asking for more money. And then they'd retract. You know, they kind of got cold feet. So Hollywood likes to take people's stories for free. They weren't having any of that. So they were like 5 million up front. 10 million back end, 5% ownership of the movie's residual, you know, the ownership and just Hollywood, they're bullies. I dealt with these people. They're complete bullies.
So when you get involved then in the, you decide to take this on and you realize, wait a minute, this is legitimate. What was the moment for you that you realized this is real. This is not this guy, Charlie, just trying to make some money, that this is a legitimate story.
So for the
Cause you won't say allegedly, he was there. Like you'll say flat out that he was there.
I've That's already said you, his name. I say his name every day online in other interviews. We have a legal issue. They won't get me involved because they're afraid of me on both sides. Like, cause they know once they say to me, you know, hey, Chris, you want to make an opening statement? Yeah, Charlie killed Ron Goldman with O.J. Simpson on June 12th, 1994. Now go ahead, ask me what you want to ask me. And I'm going to put that on the record. And once that's on the record in a civil case, that stuff can be used against him in a criminal case. I'm not saying they're going to reopen the case. I've already dealt with LAPD many times. I met with four different detectives, okay? Two of them drove to my house, okay? At least LAPD listens, so we got to give them credit. They could have ignored me, and they didn't. So, but the answer is, for 3 nights, I didn't sleep at all, not a wink. I didn't know what was going on. I was like, am I the only person that knows this in the world? It was a curse. It was not a blessing. It was dark. 3 weeks went by. I did all the research I could. I watched everything, read the book, did all the stuff I did. I was like, oh, maybe it's real. Still didn't believe it. I didn't. Okay. It took 1.5 years for me to truly believe this.
Over the course of that 1.5 years, what evidence did you stumble upon? I know you, in fact, you're the only civilian to have access to the discovery files, as I understand it,
right? In the world.
Holy smokes. And is that all of them?
No, there's more. These are the key parts that I put in folders.
And those are the discovery files that you got your hands on related to the O.J. Simpson trial and the discovery against O.J., yes?
No one's ever seen it, ever.
So in that 1.5 years, is that what you were doing, going through those files?
I only got these files 4 months ago. So I've been on this for 7 years. So this is new. Some of the evidence is kind of new too. I didn't even know some of the evidence existed till I went in the files. I was like, wait, why are they talking about two root hairs in the hat? That's DNA. You could run that. So it's a massive cover-up, first of all. We'll get into that. It's a massive cover-up by LAPD, prosecutor, defense team. They all knew there was somebody else there. They knew that. Dr. Henry Lee said it. Bodden said it. Golden said it on tape, under oath. Someone else here. Must be some kind of superhero to do this. That was that famous line that Dr. Henry Lee said. But nobody wanted to listen to Dr. Henry Lee, right? So anyway, my point is, it took years to see all the evidence. Some of it's not accessible. You can't get it. I have photos from LAPD of that hat going into the bag, item number 27. And I have the matching log in the discovery file, item 27. So I can corroborate that that hat is in evidence at LAPD.
It's so when you spoke to LAPD,
took a long time.
This yeah.
is a long journey.
And I'm sure your head is probably swimming with so many facts about all of these little pieces here. So forgive me for trying to pull out different pieces from different bookshelves, so to speak. So when you're speaking to LAPD, you go to them with this revelation. You said they listened to you. Did they take it any further? Did they do anything? No. They're not going to reopen an investigation. Did they tell you why or why not?
Never interviewed Charlie. Never interviewed the other producer who has the tape. I will not
confirm. What tape?
The confession tape.
Can you tell? Can you tell me what he says on it? So Charlie confesses to a producer.
I haven't heard the whole tape. They won't let me hear it. They didn't want me to have this. I had to have another source whistleblow on someone, a producer, and give me the copy of it. And then a source leaked it to the reporters in Miami. So I've never heard the whole tape, but I'll tell you this. I know what's not on there is Charlie saying he stabbed Ron Goldman. That's not on there. What's on there is his life of crime in the mafia, how he met OJ, how he went to Bundy, and how OJ did it. He's trying to blame OJ, but he's saying he's a witness. Okay.
So he's saying, I saw it. Mm-hmm. I was there. I saw this happen. He parked the Bronco. Maybe you can walk me back a little bit. How does OJ become friends with this guy, Charlie?
Cocaine. He's his dealer. There was a guy named Joey Ippolito, who was a very known mafioso from Miami, Joey Ippolito. He was friends with OJ. He was friends with Al Cowlings. These guys were in nefarious dealings together. And this has tried to come up in the trial. And Ito didn't want to hear any of it. They didn't want to hear anything about cocaine. And the defense didn't either, because once you open that up, you start to see OJ knew these mob guys. And once you open that up, you start to reveal the restaurant industry and how they were bringing in drugs on the pallets at the famous bars with the famous celebrities. Yeah, I won't name them. I know who they are. There was a lot of stuff. They didn't want to open this. They had OJ's blood at the crime scene. They have him dripping his blood. His blood's mixed with Ron Goldman's blood in the Bronco. They got him. They don't need Charlie who? Who's Charlie? Who's Joey Ippolito? They don't want any of that. They just want OJ. They want the fame. They're going to make millions. Even Marcia Clark supposedly said, this case is a loser, but it's going to make me famous. Okay, there was a quick note. There was one of the DAs that they were consulting with that goes, this case is a problem. And they're like, why do we have so much evidence? They go, that's the problem. There's too much evidence.
Too much evidence.
Mm-hmm. There's too much.
So we need to whittle it down. We need to whittle it down and show one particular story.
There's too much stuff going on. One particular narrative. There's two crime scenes. There's blood at the house, in the house, outside, in the driveway, behind the house. There's a glove. Furman's a Nazi. He's a racist. They're catching him planting evidence on people right before they had to settle a case for $100,000. What? What's going on? They warned Marcia Clark, do not use Mark Furman. Do not. They warned her. Didn't want to listen. Didn't care. They told Chris Darden, don't have him try on the gloves. He didn't care. These people were warned. Dr. Henry Lee came to the prosecution first and said, do you want my help? They told him to kiss off because he knew there were two people there. Hmm. Yeah.
So the defense, do you have evidence that the defense clearly knew there was a second person there?
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't want, it makes sense, right? They wouldn't want to mention this guy, Charlie.
They can't.
Because then.
Then you have OJ.
Then it makes their client, right? So you can't bring anything up about Charlie. OJ, you have to keep him quiet.
OJ did a fake reward, said he'd give $500,000 to whoever came forward that they did the murders. They can't reveal Charlie and Joey because then you have OJ. So the prosecution could have revealed Charlie and Joey, and Marcia Clark had called the U.S. Marshals. Someone from her office called the U.S. Marshal and goes, where's Joey Ippolito? Because they thought he was involved, but that got swept under the rug and they never brought up his name ever again. He never was talked about in the trial, nor was Charlie ever again. But they knew something was up. There were people in chat rooms. I know a guy who was in a chat room with LAPD at the time of the murders, in real time. And they said, drugs, drugs, drugs. This is a drug hit. This is a drug murder. And it was.
How was it a drug murder, a drug hit?
So it was an extortion by Joey Ippolito and Charlie to squeeze O.J. Simpson for about $50,000 to $80,000 on the night of the murders. O.J. flipped out, made Charlie go in the Bronco with him, and they caught two bodies. So it was an extortion that O.J. took too far. They weren't going to kill. Ron Goldman just randomly was there, bringing back Juditha's glasses. Okay? So what I'm saying is OJ did it. It's OJ's fault. That's what Charlie says. OJ did it. We didn't go to murder anyone. We went to get OJ. He owed us some money. Faye and Nicole and Keith and all these people were dealing with our guys with cocaine. And OJ, it's an extortion. You got to understand how the mob works. They extort people.
So just help me out. Help me understand it. So, because I don't understand how the mob works. I mean, I've certainly read the books and watched the movies, but yeah, I don't want to know, frankly, other than tangentially. But so OJ, the story we've all been told is that he was a mad lover, right? He was furious that Nicole Brown Simpson was there with Ron Goldman. So how do these two get murdered on that night when they're trying to extort OJ? They want money from OJ. They want $80,000 from him. He's their drug friend. He's there, you know, he knows these guys in the mafia. They're trying to shake him down and get some money out of OJ. They're going to extort him. They're going to maybe blackmail him, or they're going to share information publicly that he's on drugs. What are they going to do to him? And how do then suddenly they get into a car and they're over at Nicole's house?
Because OJ makes Charlie go with him. He goes, we're going to Nicole's. He tells you in his book, he looks at his watch. He goes, it was 10:03 p.m. I had just enough time to go read her the Riot Act. So he's trying to rush over there to say, look at Charlie, look, he's mad, he hates Nicole. The two of them are at each other's throats at this point. They were still dating up until 2 weeks before the murders. People don't know that. They reconciled, they were still dating, even though they were divorced. So what I'm saying is it was a mess, it was an awkward situation. OJ shouldn't have gone over there. He drove over, get in the Bronco. If you read OJ's book, chapter 6, He tells you the story, but he removes the cocaine angle. So he says, Charlie comes to him and goes, oh, so the girls are doing some kinky stuff. I heard these guys talking about them at dinner. Oh, so Charlie goes over to OJ's house at 10 o'clock at night to go tell him that? I don't think so. Nobody would do that. It's a drug extortion that they have to hide. So that's why the books, and then I told Charlie, get in. And Charlie goes, well, I don't want to get in. Me going's not going to solve anything. And that same thing is corroborated in here. Word for word.
So help me out here. So Charlie gets in the car reluctantly. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to do this.
Right.
And who's the tougher guy here? Is it OJ? Former football player is the tougher guy. And he's a mob guy. So he's answering. He's listening. He's listening to OJ. He gets in the car reluctantly. And to do what? What was the...
Let's remember, mob guys live this. This is what they do. So Charlie's not going to care. Okay, I'm with a very famous person, one of the most famous people in the world. It's kind of fun, right? Let's go right over there. Oh, he gets to extort some people. He maybe collects some money. Joey threatened to murder Charlie before. It's in here. Where he kidnaps him, sticks a gun in his mouth. These mob guys would like murder each other. So in the back of Charlie's mind, is he thinking, if I don't make this happen, I'm dead. It's possible. So he's going to ride with OJ, see what happens. He doesn't think they're going to murder. The last thing Charlie is thinking about is that OJ is going to murder somebody. You feel me? Why would you think OJ is going to murder somebody with you right there? I believe OJ takes a knife out of his house. It's a Victorinox Swiss Army hunting knife. And Charlie doesn't really know he has it until they are already at Bundy. That's why OJ says in his book, I pulled this knife out from under my seat. It's not under his seat. He has the knife with him. He goes, look at this blade. And Charlie goes, what are you doing? You look like a psycho. Put the knife away. So Charlie took the knife. And OJ tells you that in the Judith Regan interview. Just watch it. So Charlie took the knife. So I go out there and I go out front and I see candles and I hear music. And while I'm there, a guy shows up. That's Ron Goldman. So OJ, he's trying to tell you. And then Charlie followed this guy in and he brought the knife. As things got heated, I just remember Nicole fell and hurt herself. No, you punched her, OJ. The guy was a genius. There's never going to be another guy like OJ ever again. There never will be a case like this ever again. The guy wrote a book and told you he had an accomplice.
So he punches. So maybe walk me through then the murder itself.
Sure.
What you know you've been able to piece together from the evidence. And I guess you're able to cross-confirm this with the massive case file that you just showed us, right? So can you walk me through? So to the point where he punches Nicole in the face, knocks her down, then what happens?
So the two of them, now there's other scenarios. Remember, I'm not God. I wasn't there. Okay. But I'll give you the short, brief version. Okay. OJ and Charlie.
And this is based on what? Can you tell me?
Everything. Not just the discovery, everything. The witnesses, the mob guys, Joey's brothers, the family members, everybody, the reporters, the investigators. Okay. I have too much. There's too much.
So right. Right.
Based on everything, Charlie and OJ come through the back gate. OJ has a key that he stole from Nicole. They come through the back gate. They walk down the up and down the stairs. There's this long walkway. They get out front and there's Ron Goldman and Nicole talking by the gate. When they show up, a fight ensues. What are you doing? Look at this guy. You know what this guy just asked me for? Because of you and Faye. Keith. Who's this guy? What's this guy doing here? Oh, man, I'm just bringing the glasses. Oh, I heard you guys were dealing on the side. This is drugs. You're here to get with my wife, right? My kids are home. My kids, they're upstairs. OJ sees, not only is he pissed about this drug extortion, now he sees a good-looking young white guy with his ex-wife, who's really his girlfriend, and it's dark, and there's music, and there's candles, and he's sensing all this. When they go into Nicole's house, they find a bath drawn with candles around it. Was she going to hook up with Ron Goldman? Maybe. Like, who knows? So OJ knows all this is going on and he snaps. And Nicole swings on OJ. Nicole freaks out. That's why he tells you in the book, she came at me all arms and legs flailing. He's blaming her. These people re-victimize their victims. That's what murderers do. They own their soul. So he's telling you, she came at me because he's trying to blame her. She fell and hurt herself. She didn't fall and hurt herself. You slugged her. And then basically from there, I'm not going to go into gory details. Anyone can write me. They know my phone number and email. It's all online. A fight ensues. They kill Ron Goldman first, Charlie and OJ. Nicole is on the ground wobbling around. She's trying to get up. She tries to get in the fight. They just push her off. Okay, that's why there's some evidence of her like scratching someone, or there's hairs. It's hard to explain. Furman talks about these hairs too of Goldman on Nicole. She's somehow getting in this fight too. Okay, or she hugged Goldman. We don't know. And Ron is killed first. It takes at least 3 minutes to kill him. Okay. And then OJ kills Nicole. And then they escape up the back, strip their clothes down.
So Ron is killed by Charlie.
And OJ. That's why there's that's why the coroner says there's two morphologically different types of stab wounds on the victims. He was kicked off the case after 1 day of prelim. Why? Because he said there were two knives. There is evidence that there are two knives, period.
Two different knives stabbing Ron Goldman.
Single edge, double edge.
And this was not presented at trial.
It was presented at trial, and that's what was part of the doubt. It was Bob Shapiro.
Oh, right.
Yup. They went after Golden. Could two knives have created all the wounds on the victims? Yes. And Marsha Clark was like, get rid of him. He was gone the next day. He brought a gun to work. Irwin Golden brought a gun. He was a coroner. He did over 700 cases. They tried to ruin this man's reputation. He brought a gun into the office and they go, why do you have a gun? Maybe I should use it on one of those lawyers. They ruined this guy's name. This guy was the coroner who did the autopsies. This case is a fraud. And everybody that really knows the OJ story, they'll see it. You'll see it. So it's, yes, single edge. OJ has a single edge. Charlie has a double edge.
So Ron Goldman falls after 3 minutes and is dead. Then Nicole. Mm-hmm. What happens to Nicole after that? OJ completes that?
Yeah, just OJ, I believe. I mean, Golden said there's two different types of stab wounds on both victims. I'm not a doctor. I've read the autopsy for months and months. I don't believe Charlie would touch Nicole. Okay? And most of those wounds are single edge. That's OJ's knife. Okay, so I'm not going to get into the details. She has about 7 stab wounds on her, and then she has a massive wound across her neck. So all the blood evidence, the shoe print in blood, that's OJ's Bruno Mali. It's a Z shape. It's a size 12. Then there's 10.5 parallel line. They call it the PLP that Dr. Henry Lee circles and goes, there's another shoe print here. There's someone else here.
So this other shoe print, there's another bloody shoe print. It's not Ron Goldman's. It's not Nicole Brown Simpson's. And it's not OJ's.
It's not the police. They tested all the police's shoes. In this file, I have the pictures of their shoes with the bottoms of all the cops' shoes with their name. So that they were trying to figure out, like, to make sure that no police left a shoe print.
Do we know the size of shoe that this guy Charlie wears?
10.5.
How convenient, right?
Well, no, he's...
Yeah, so
he's,
yeah. So after the bodies, after they've killed them, what's the next step after this that we know of from everything you've pieced
even
together?
Even from Charlie's confession and even from OJ's confession, they start stripping their clothes. That's why they find no bloody shoe prints in the road. They take their shoes off. They strip their clothes down. They get in the Bronco. Charlie holds all the clothes on the passenger seat. That's why there's blood all over the passenger seat. Headrest, back of the seat, bottom of the seat, passenger side of the console, floorboard, door, blood on the outside of the passenger door. Why is there so much blood on the passenger side? Because someone's sitting there. So they
holding
strip
all of it. It seems so sloppy. I mean, you know, you see all these mob guys that seems like they're so careful, you know, they're so careful in the Mario Puzo, you know, novels and movies. They're so clean and careful. They don't leave any evidence, right? They're silent killers, but.
Well, the mob style, look, the mob does, there's two different ways the mob could kill you. They can come up from behind you and shoot in the back of the head, or they will torture you to death. Okay. There's different ways they do it. Okay. Oh, one behind the ear. That's a famous saying, right? Okay. Well, I know stories about gas pipe Casso torturing people to death. So it's not about like so clean, just one pop, walk into the shadows. Remember, Charlie doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't think there's going to be a murder. Okay. So like my books talk about, they got a boogie. That's what I say. Like there's no time. They can't clean up anything. There's people everywhere. It's Wilshire and Bundy. Lewis Karp drives his car past them within minutes in the back alley and parks. He lives next door to Nicole. They have no time. They need to get out of there. So they take that Bronco back to Rockingham and park on a side street because they know the limo's there. That's why the limo driver never sees them, never sees the Bronco. No one can figure this out. It's crazy. And Charlie gets rid of
it. Can you explain that part for our audience that may not be familiar with that part of the story? Why is there a limo there? Why is the Bronco there? How do they get there?
So when OJ and Charlie leave in the Bronco, the limo's not there. It's on its way. OJ's to fly to Chicago for a Hertz golf tournament fundraiser. He knows it's coming. Okay. They leave about 5 to 10 minutes before it lands. He's early. He's supposed to be there at 10:45. But Alan Park wanted to impress him, so he comes early. He lands at like 10:25. OJ and Charlie are gone by then. They're not home. So the limo's there. He's casing the place out. They're over at Bundy committing double murder. They come back about 10:52, somewhere in there. I can tell you how after I know the time. OJ comes behind the house. He bangs on the window. He bangs on the wall for Cato to come out. It's a signal for Cato to come out and help him. He's not crashing into an air conditioner. That's a ruse. Cato comes out. OJ's like, go hide the limo guy. That's why the limo driver sees two people walk together like this. He sees a blonde man in front of a black man in all black clothing. And as he sees the white man coming to the gate, that's Cato Kalin. And behind him goes OJ Simpson into the house like that. So how's he see him simultaneously? If Cato didn't know he was there, why are they there together in the driveway? And Marsha Clark couldn't figure any of this out. Yeah, yeah. And so when OJ goes in, then he buzzes, I overslept. And the limo driver's waiting for Cato to open the gate. He's like, what? He testifies, I don't know why the guy wouldn't let me in. Because it's a setup. Cato's distracting him until OJ buzzes him in through the house. Oh, I overslept. Come on in. Yeah. Dude, Alan Park was
and he like, goes in. He goes in to presumably clean himself up or.
Oh, yeah. Showers. Yep. Showers quickly.
So he basically sneaks in to pretend like he's in the house, essentially.
And the Bronco is on Bristol Street. It's on the next street over. They don't see it.
With Charlie.
Correct.
So Charlie is sitting in the Bronco a few blocks over.
With all the bloody,
clothes. Mm-hmm. And OJ went home because he knew he had to get the limo to take this flight for this Hertz golf tournament. So he's in there quickly trying to clean.
That's why he says, I'm getting on that plane. Like when he does the dialogue between Charlie and OJ back and forth in the Bronco, he goes, I'm getting on that plane. I'm doing it because that's his alibi. He knows he's got to get on that plane. That's going to help him. And he was right. It helped him. Then he flies back the next morning. And that's why he tells Charlie, you got to get rid of this stuff for me forever. Say it to me. And Charlie tells him, okay. He makes him say it.
So meanwhile, the clothing of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman are
No, no.
They're naked.
That's at the crime scene. No, no. The clothing of OJ and Charlie.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So he gives him what he would, does OJ sort of strip down in the Bronco and give him his clothes, or
in the alley, in the walkway before they, you got to understand, it's hard. Look, it's hard to understand everything because there's so many details. It's gated. There's two gates like this. Before they come right to the back gate, they strip their shoes, their clothes. Then they exit the gate. That's why there's no shoe prints in the street, in the alley. Mm. They just disappear. You see what I mean? So right, they strip and then they load the shit into the Bronco and they get out of there.
And they're naked, presumably, driving? Or
OJ is like in boxers and socks. Charlie, wow. I don't
know. Charlie,
Charlie doesn't say too much about the murders, man. You take what's on the tape. You take what's in the screenplay. That's it. If you were to call him tomorrow, he'll go no comment. Okay. I've had many people talk to him, many reporters. Oh, I don't want to talk about the past. He'll say this stuff like, he won't deny it, but he's very, these mob guys are brilliant with the cryptic, like, confessions and hiding evidence and information.
Now, the screenplay that you have that they didn't want you to have is based on his own testimony, his own conversations with the producer spilling the beans, right? So he's told his story. It's written down in this script, and it's on this confession tape.
Yes, it's over 15 hours long.
So OJ flies away, gets out of there. Charlie disposes then, what we understand, and he tells the story that he told the producer that he then disposes of the clothes. What does he do with them?
He burns all the clothes.
Hmm.
So when Charlie has to park the Bronco, right? So when OJ leaves in the limousine, here comes Charlie. That's why it's parked a little askew, and they always talked about this. Why is the rear end sticking out? And OJ says, well, that's how I always park it, because he knew it was there. He saw it the next day when he came back from Chicago. All the news are there, and they're trampling the crime scene. It was a mess. But Charlie parks the Bronco, not OJ. That's why Alan Park testifies, I never saw it, and no one could ever figure this out. Well, how's OJ in the house if the Bronco's not there? Because it's not there. Charlie tells you that on the tape. He parks the Bronco. He rids the evidence.
So he parks the Bronco like near the limousine, or
the limousine is inside. No, the limousine's gone. He parks it outside.
Oh, they've left.
Yeah, he parks it by the numbers 360, 360 Rockingham. He sticks it right next to that, right by the gate. There's two gates. This whole case is like there's two of everything. Like there's a gate on Rockingham and there's a gate on Ashford. He parks it by Rockingham.
Wow. So that's why it's not there. So then when all the reporters come and they want to know what's going on, OJ is away at this golf tournament. His Bronco is parked in front of
the
house.
They see the Bronco. But there it is.
So the reporters walk up to this thing. And there's blood on the car. Presumably, OJ's not even there, but still all that evidence, all the blood evidence is there. And OJ just got on a plane.
Yeah, it's taped off. I mean, people aren't like jumping in the Bronco. There's crime. They've been at the crime scene since 6 a.m. OJ shows up about 12:30, 12-ish, like somewhere in there, like when he lands at the house. That's when they cuff him. That famous photo, he's cuffed in the white shirt.
Right.
And Kardashian takes his bag. If you're the LAPD, why do you let Rob Kardashian take his luggage away? What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Okay? They trampled the crime scene. There's people walking all over Rockingham. It's a crime scene. There's blood everywhere. In the driveway, behind the house, the gloves behind the house, his socks. Okay, I'll tell your audience this too, because people love these little wrinkles. Okay. You guys want to know why there's no blood on the gas pedal and the brake of the Bronco? Because OJ's not wearing shoes. Because no one could figure that out either. That's why.
Wow.
And don't believe any of these conspiracy theories about Jason Simpson, Glenn Rogers, all these wackos that keep saying this. These people want to hurt people. They're bad people. They stuck up for OJ. Get to look closer at those corrupted, polluted minds that tell you OJ didn't do it. Oh, there's no Charlie. OJ made that up. No, he did not make that up.
Cato Kalin, was he lying on the stand? Was he telling the truth? Where does Cato fit into this?
Cato lied many times on the stand, and I've reached out to him. He's a fraud. He runs. His producer runs. He goes and they yap on their podcast, tell the same old story. Nicole hated you, Cato. She hated him at the end. She told OJ, I don't want to see his face. Don't have him here at all. And I believe Cato was paid by the defense to lie for OJ. I do, and I actually have proof of it. He lied about not seeing OJ behind the house. He saw him. That's a lie. He lied about the time that the thumps were on the back wall. It was not at 10:40 p.m. Impossible. He covered things. Even his own friend, Grant Kramer, in these files, which I will release and I will leak them, Grant Kramer tells the LAPD where Cato was staying. He was staying with Grant. Okay, Grant had a very famous family. And he knew Nicole. And he met Nicole with Grant. Okay. Even Grant Kramer's own friend says the story Cato told me is completely different than the story he's telling the world. And it's in writing. So, like I said, we've given Cato chances to come forward. He's not going to get arrested. Okay, he had his little fame run. He made a bunch of money. It's over. It's over. This whole story is over. OJ's gone. We're coming. We've been coming forward. I mean, we hope that this triggers something. And I have another interview coming up too next week. But I'm not going to keep doing this forever. Like I've been telling everybody. And so, yes, Cato knows a lot. And he was involved with OJ and Nicole. He was at the fight when the domestic violence call. He's there in 93. They named the dog Cato after him. You know, Nicole did like him, and I believe they did have a tryst with each other too. I do, even though he denies it.
Why do you think the media suppressed this? You mentioned the Judith Regan interview with Charlie. So what happens? Let's talk about this post, post arrest, post trial, all of that. Where does Charlie go, first of all, that night? So he cleans up all the evidence. He puts all that away. Then where does Charlie go while OJ is flying off to the...
He goes back to Miami, where he's from. He was running drugs from Miami to LA for Joey. He calls him a ghost. The ghost is a guy behind the scenes in a drug operation that you don't talk about. He was flying to meet the cars. He had his Colombian and Mexican drug dealers driving the cars from Miami to LA loaded with cocaine. That is talked about in here. That is described on tape. That is talked about. Oh, I didn't want to go to LA. I hate LA. Like all this stuff. He's not from LA. He's a runner. He's running the operation. Anyway, he goes back to Miami, never comes back to LA ever again. Ever. I have his dossier. He never comes back to LA again. Okay? After that, him and OJ ignore each other for 5 years. They never speak once at all. 5 years. In 1999, they reconnect and OJ moves to Miami. They start working together again. Joey's back in the picture. And for about 5 or 6 years, Charlie and OJ and Joey start to do nefarious things. OJ was supposed to be in a porno. They line up a porno. They pay him, and then he rips out the cameras out of the room. Yeah, it's a funny story. OJ gets his door kicked in for ecstasy dealing. Guaranteed that Charlie was involved in that. FBI kicks his door in like 04. Somewhere in there. He has a road rage incident, goes back on trial, gets off. They're trying to do a podcast. They're supposed to do TV interviews. They're all in cahoots again. Joey, Charlie, and OJ. For years. Now watch this, Clayton. Are you ready for this? So in 2006, Joey Ippolito is going to die of terminal brain cancer. And what a coincidence. Joey, Charlie, and OJ write a book called If I Did It in 2006. And what happens to that interview? Judith Regan's interview gets shelved and she gets fired by Rupert Murdoch, and they make her the scapegoat and they call her anti-Semitic. And she writes an article just recently and just pulled it down. Why? What's up, Judith? What's the matter? When I came to you and told you that Charlie was a real guy, you told me you couldn't do anything with it and you blocked the story too. So now watch. Now, this is the best part. The book gets shelved. If I did it, it gets put in a vault, one copy. They hold on to it. The Judith Regan interview gets filmed and it's shelved. They don't destroy it. And they air it in 2018. It's shelved for 12 years. So no one ever saw OJ talk about Charlie. Right? Now watch. In 2006, when the deal falls through with the Regan thing, the book, HarperCollins, OJ and Charlie decide to go rob someone in Las Vegas to get his memorabilia back because he's desperate. His money deal went away. So in 2007, there's Charlie and OJ, the dynamic duo, robbing Bruce Fromong and Alfred Beardsley in Las Vegas, Nevada. And OJ goes away for 9 years. And who's that little short bald guy walking with a big old box? The second killer from June 12th. And a note to your media people. Why won't you tell the story? Why?
Yeah, why? I don't understand why you would pull this interview. This would be the most amazing interview of all time.
No, I mean the Chris Todd, Charlie, OJ. But no, we'll keep talking. I'm just saying, like, to the media. Look, you worked in the media, okay?
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say people are media because they get offended. Okay. So
yeah.
If you're an independent journalist or you're the media, I'm sure you know a bunch of people, whatever, the word's out there. I'm saying is, why won't the media today, for the last 3 years, tell the story? There's a lawsuit in the 11th Circuit Court in Miami-Dade. Why have you not reported one word about that lawsuit? You love lawsuits. Like, what? So it's a cover up, it's censorship. Well, yeah.
What's that lawsuit?
Charlie got a little butt hurt and, tried to sue a reporter for defamation, and he's about to lose. His case is about to be tossed.
Why would it be tossed?
Because he has no case. How do you claim defamation, right? If you're the one who said you were there. How do we defame you if you told us you were there? You put it on tape. You wrote a screenplay. You did it with the producers. How are we defaming you? No, we whistle blew on you. Because you committed a crime.
So a reporter was trying to talk about this story, and he
did.
After
he ran an article. In Miami New Times. They had the courage. They did the Bosch story, the steroids, A-Rod. There's some great reporters there at Miami New Times. They're not afraid. Unlike LA Times, cowards. Unlike the AP Press in LA, cowards. So they had to do it in Miami. They had to come out of Miami and leak the evidence, and that guy's name is Bob Norman, the journalist, and he got sued with the Miami New Times, and that's going to all be over very soon here.
Fascinating. So what is next for Charlie? I mean, he goes free. I mean, he's never going to be prosecuted. There's not a case going to be brought against him, and that's on the record, and we know that's the case.
Yep. LAPD has already stated we will not reopen this case. It's in writing. It's in the article at Miami New Times. They try to leave the door open, like, in their cryptic, sneaky way. Well, if somebody brought us something, hello? I brought it to you already. Just stop. They're never going to reopen the case. He's going to walk free. He'll never get arrested. If his movie's made, you can go watch it. Get your popcorn. Go watch it. If they write a book, go buy the book. Go read it. Whatever. They say he has health issues. They say he's not going to live much longer. That's how they said to us, oh, he's dying. Oh, he's dying for 7 years? Like, this, Joe Bonanno said he was dying to live 17 more years. So it's just, this is what they do. It's a mafia story. It's the greatest mafia story never told, okay? It's the greatest civilian murder case in history, okay? The truth needs to come out. I don't care if Charlie goes to jail. I don't. I think he's courageous for even coming forward. You got to give the guy some credit. He's risking his own butt in a way too. You know, learn the truth. The families blocked the story. The Browns and the Goldmans both blocked this story from the media. Yup.
Why? Why?
Clayton, listen, they all block it. All of them. Okay, watch. Ready? We'll play a game with you. You ready, sir? You want Clayton? Clayton, go to the biggest news executive you know and show them this interview. Go tell them you solved the O.J. Simpson murder case and watch what they do to you. Watch.
Why? I just can't wrap my head. Is it because there's so much dirt associated with O.J. that he had, that there was so many people were involved with the drugs that they are also, you know, we know Norm MacDonald, right? Norm MacDonald, who'd go on Saturday Night Live and make fun of O.J. on every weekend on Weekend Update, that NBC fired him. Because, you know, Don Olmeyer, these guys, they loved O.J. Simpson. They fired Norm MacDonald for mocking O.J., a murderer, for crying out loud. You can't.
Well, and also,
they all knew him.
I did an interview recently. These guys were like comedians and they're cool guys. I went up to their house. It was fun. There's not a lot of views. They brought up Norm MacDonald's name and I bashed Norm MacDonald for 10 minutes. Okay.
Huh.
So because look, I'm an art guy too. I like movies. I like humor. I get it. Okay. Norm MacDonald trolling the murders of Ron and Nicole, I don't find amusing at all. One or two jokes here and there. Cool. Great job, guys. Good job. Okay. But he was obsessed with it. Okay. And I'm glad it's gone, to be honest. Sorry. So these people have trolled the murders of two innocent people for their own profit. Okay. For their own views and clicks.
Great
point. They do it every day. Yeah.
Great point.
So, but this is how I would say it too. Look, if I came up to you on the street and I go, hey, do you know O.J. Simpson had a murder accomplice? His name is Charlie Blank, right? And you go, first of all, you can't even wrap your head around it, right? So A, you don't believe it. B, even right. if I show you all the evidence, O.J.'s book, O.J. saying it, you don't believe O.J., right? I show you the blood evidence, you don't believe LAPD, right? If I tell you about Cochran and Scheck saying there's a second killer, well, they work for the defense. If I say Marcia Clark and Darden, they didn't know there was a second killer. Oh, well, they're the prosecution. They're clueless, or they hid it. Well, pick one. Which one is it? How did they not know there's someone else there? Okay. It's like me coming up to you and going, hey, you want to take down Nike? And you go, not really. Hey, you want to destroy Coca-Cola? Look, I'm going to say this story and people go crazy when I say this. If you'll allow me to say a 30-second story.
Of course.
Nicholas Copernicus, because I try to say myself, I'm the true crime Copernicus, and this is going to set people off, and I love it. Nicholas Copernicus said the sun was the center of our solar system and that the earth was round and it rotated and it went around the sun, and nobody believed him. Okay? It took Johannes Kepler, Galileo, and Isaac Newton to say he was right. Okay, then it changed the world. But when he first said it, it didn't make any sense. So when I came to everybody for 7 years and said OJ had a murder accomplice, it didn't make any sense to you and your paradigm could not figure it out. Okay, hopefully someday you guys figure it out. Okay, and it might take people like Clayton and it might take people like Bob Norman and it might take Geraldo to catch it or Kevin Frazier, who I went to, and other people, or Dr. Phil, or Nancy Grace. Maybe when they say it, you'll believe it. But the problem is, they blocked it too.
Well, you've blown my mind like 30 times tonight.
Sorry.
And no, I love it. I mean, that's why I do this job.
I feel bad sometimes.
No, I mean, it's important. You know, here's a killer that's walking free. And we've been lied to. It's the one thing, you have a killer that's walking free, but you also have the massive cover-up that's, in fact, to me, is equally heinous, right? You're covering up in order to pitch a certain narrative to hide and protect people. And that, to me, is just as heinous in many ways.
And a media blackout on this is disgusting. Because when you talk about OJ on Twitter and you ran all these stories, Daily Mail, New York Post, LA Times, NBC, Mike Florio talking about OJ every two. Well, what about me? What about my story? Why are you guys, OJ takes a sneeze on Twitter. It's 50 times. He says he has prostate cancer. Did you vet that? How did you know he had prostate cancer? You didn't. You wrote the stories because he said he did. And he said he didn't kill Nicole. So you wrote those stories too. And I will say this, let me say this, because I want to appeal to you and to other people. What this story needs, I don't care if I'm the one involved. What this need, it just needs one courageous news executive to go, why are we not telling this story? And at that point, I mean, it's got to be a high up. It's got to be a guy who doesn't need anybody's permission. And he tells all those reporters below him, you know this guy, don't you? You know him. Yeah, he called us 50 times. Yeah, he called the news desk 50 times. He sends us all the emails every day. Why are you not letting him talk? Why? And it will happen. It needs one key person to have the courage. And I pray for the victims that we find that person.
My guest has been Chris Todd, investigator, author. It's blown my mind multiple times tonight. I hope this lights a fire. I hope this draws enormous attention to this story, a story that we've all lived with, a story that we were watching the NBA Finals when a white Bronco, you know, interrupted. I remember sitting with my girlfriend at the time and I'm like, what is this? What is going on here? A story that captive. I remember, you know, my entire dorm room watching the trial when we were waiting the verdict. I mean, it was a story that absolutely captivated a nation and the world. And to know this other side of it that we've never been told is incredibly important.
It's a part of our pop culture. And I wrote in my book, I said, for Ron and Nicole, for all of us, this is for all of us that live this nightmare to know the truth. We have a right to know. We have a need to know. There's a public safety issue. All three tenets of the journalism community or their mandates are met. Publish. Don't hide the story. Just publish something. So I really appreciate you, Clayton. Love the show. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to talk to you. And if something happens, there's no pressure with any of that. I just thank you for letting me exercise my First Amendment.
Thank you. That's what we're all about here. No censorship on this show. So we really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Chris. We appreciate it. An amazing work. Amazing work.